This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, February 18th, 2015 edition of Invest Talk. And I'd like to welcome all of those listeners listening up and down California, and those are listening live streaming on investtalk.com. You can always listen to that anywhere. And Invest Talk podcast listeners as well. There's now tens of thousands of them throughout the world, and I think we're over 4 million downloads in the history of our podcast. We're over 100,000 a month now, so we have a very strong listener base around the world listening now online via podcast. Now, Invest Talk is here for everybody, no matter where you're listening, whether it's on your desktop, on investtalk.com, on iTunes, on your iPhone, whether it's on a terrestrial station, on traditional radio. However you hear us, we welcome all of you, and we welcome your questions. We want to hear from you. This show is about you and getting you the information you need to make better investment decisions. And hopefully the topics we bring up will help you, and also the topics that our callers bring up will help everyone as well. We always try to broaden it out and make it something that everybody can learn from. You know, we're on your side. Now, as you try to make the kinds of money decisions that will hopefully pay off, we help you build up your retirement war chest. Now, tomorrow we're going to talk about the 8 things people get wrong about retirement, and there are false ideas that many folks accept as truth about retirement. That's one of the services we provide our money manager clients. Help them sort out the truth from fiction when it comes to preparing for a comfortable retirement. It may seem like mission impossible. And your challenge is, how can I generate a steady stream of income from my retirement savings that lasts the rest of my life, no matter how long I live? And what happens in the economy? Is any plan bulletproof? No, absolutely not. You go into a depression, I don't care what you have, something is going to be hit hard, even if you are conservative, very conservative. Some part of your portfolio is going to get hit hard. So nothing is completely bulletproof. But every plan should have a plan B. And that is, you build in some contingencies. You make adjustments as you go along to avoid too much risk. And as you get closer to retirement age, you have to think about this even more. But at the same time, you really can't afford to retreat, keeping some of, you got to keep some of your funds in play and making sure you have the right mix and taking the right risk for the goals that you are trying to achieve. So this is what we are here to help you with. If you have a question, please don't worry that it's been asked before, or maybe you think it's too simple, or that you should already know the answer. Please go ahead and ask it anyway. Chances are good that many others have the same question on their mind. They just didn't pick up the phone. So bring your questions or opinions to us now at 8899-CHART. That's C-H-A-R-T. Let's take a quick question from our 24-hour listener line now.
I just had a general question about mutual funds. I was wondering if mutual funds ever split. A no-brainer for you guys, but I just had that question. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Do mutual funds ever split? I don't think so. I've never seen a mutual fund split. I don't see a reason why they would split. You know, usually a stock will split mainly to try to get the smaller investor in. You know, when Apple's $700 a share, everyone said it's too expensive, it's $700 a share. And it split 7-for-1, now it's $100 a share. It's cheaper. It's not cheaper. In no way, shape, or form is it cheaper. The price is just different. You want me to rephrase that again? You want me to say it again? It's not a cheaper stock. Apple is not cheaper today at, what is it, $127 a share than when it split back in June. Because split adjusted, it, back then it was $94, $93 or so. When it split, it was at $600 and something dollars. Didn't change the value of that company. Apple's still worth what it was worth. Worth the same, had the same market cap before the split as it did after the split. So that gets people kind of excited, but it really doesn't mean a whole lot. So do mutual funds split? I'm going to say, I wouldn't say it doesn't happen or would never happen. I just see no reason why it would happen. And I've never seen it happen. So it's if it happens, it's extremely rare because there's not a lot of motivation behind it. Right? 8899 chart is our number. 8899-242-4278 is the number. Get through and ask your question. We always say, get it in sooner rather than later. Don't wait till the end of the show. Now, some say they're a gimmick, and others say they're money-making investing tools. Why options scare some investors to death? We're going to talk about that on today's show. But we also have some other things I want to discuss as well. A couple topics I didn't get to yesterday. One is, how much should you contribute to your 401k? Are you contributing enough? What is a typical guideline that most advisors are going to say you should save, percentage-wise, of your income? And then, when is it cheap? When's the best time to book airfare? I think that's, well, it's not about investing per se. It's a good way to save money. Right? If you book at the right time, you're planning on going somewhere. I think that was an interesting report that came out. I also want to touch on a few other things. Five myths about college financial aid. 20 IRA mistakes to avoid. And then what about Greece? They just extended, I think for 2 weeks, their bailout program. There's a real risk they could leave the euro. And I said this before, it's probably not better than 50% risk, but it's still a risk. They have a lot of issues. They don't like the bailout program that they're in, at least the new government doesn't like the bailout program that they're in, and the Greek people don't because they elected them on this premise. Even though the Greek people want to stay in the euro, if the Troika doesn't agree to their terms, they could leave the euro. So what would that look like? And I think that might be interesting to go over as well. So a lot to talk about, a lot to touch on, a lot to think about. And you know what's gonna happen with the Fed? The Fed minutes came out today, and that was a kind of a market mover as well. So those are the things that are on my mind. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. What are the things that are on your mind when it comes to money? Let's take a quick look at today's market. The Dow closed down 18 points. The Nasdaq closed up 7 points, and the S&P closed flat. Right at about 2,100 was the close on the S&P. And gold was up on the dovish Fed news, meaning the Fed minutes came out and they weren't that exciting. They were kind of exciting because the Fed doesn't seem like they want to raise rates. They seem hesitant to. They didn't talk really about the strong dollar, but it didn't seem like they were ready to get rid of the language of considerable time, meaning that they're going to keep rates low for a considerable time. They're trying to figure out when to drop that language, because considerable time means, I mean, for me, a year. Considerable time, year or more. You know, it's a subjective term, but to me, it's, I would say, a year. And they are still saying it. But a lot of analysts are expecting to raise rates in June. But this language says it's probably not going to be June because they aren't dropping that considerable time language. You know, I think considerable time at least is 6 months. I think everybody would agree with that. So they need to drop that language first before you can see probably a rate increase in the coming, you know, few meetings. So that was the big news today on also Greece, just trying to figure out whether Greece is going to be able to work with the Troika and get their fiscal house in order, keep it in order, keep their bailout program going. So that was the market today. Gold was up, oil down, market was pretty much flat. You had foreign stocks were up decently. The dollar was a little weaker, and that's why you saw gold prices do so well. And you know, when it comes to economic data, there hasn't been a lot of great economic data. To be frank, most economic data I think there's been about 28-9 economic data points that have been released so far in February, and 4 have beaten, and the rest have not. Disappointed. So economically, the strong dollar is tightening financial conditions. It's not as the economy is not as robust as it was maybe, you know, 5-6 months ago. And I think that's worrying the Fed, and I think it should probably worry the market a little more than it has. Now, fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. One major characteristic is that it's less risky than equities. Managing a bond portfolio is one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. When you're InvestTalk Insider, you have access to these info sheets and much, much more. And if you want to sign up, you can do that free on InvestTalk.com. 8899 chart, 8899924278. I talked before the break a little bit quickly about the February economic numbers. And they've been pretty poor. If you look at there's been 29 data points that have missed expectations. 29 released, and 4 data points have beat expectations. That's personal income, market service PMI, so service purchasing manager index, non-farm payrolls, and JOLTS. I'm not sure what JOLTS is, but there's been 25 that have missed, and you're talking about some pretty big numbers. Personal spending, construction spending, factory orders, vehicle sales, ADP employment, challenger job cuts, initial jobless claims, unemployment rate, labor market conditions index, small business optimism, mortgage applications, retail sales, business inventory, home builder confidence, housing starts, building permits, industrial production, manufacturing production. Those all have missed. So, you know, when it comes to economic indicators, you're seeing some weakness. And this is what I talked about yesterday. A strong dollar is bad, not just for the exporters, but also our domestic producers. Think of like Ford and GM. Toyota can now lower prices because of the weaker yen and stronger dollars here in America. And so they can compete with Ford and GM, the domestic producers, much easier. And that goes for a lot of different industries. All right, so it's something to look out for. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. I'm ready for your call right now.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by Steve. Important topics, annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, an updated ETF list, and there's more. Sign up now on InvestTalk.com.
Let's get back to the handiest way to get a question to us. It's our 24-hour listener line. It's 888-99-CHART.
Hey, what do you think about Wendy's, ticker symbol WEN, and do you think this would be a good long-term hold, maybe over a 10-year period? Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Wendy's. Wendy's, most people know what Wendy's is. It's one of the largest food chains in the country, and they've come under new ownership, and I think they didn't they IPO? I want to say they IPO'd recently. Maybe not. But they have come under kind of new management, and they're doing a lot better. Their stock sank from about $22 a share in 2006 all the way down to about $3 and change. And now it's up to $11.27. So they're improving profitability. But revenue is still declining. Profitability was down 9% year over year last quarter. I didn't like that. McDonald's is not doing very well. And does that mean Wendy's is taking their market share? Probably not. I am not a big fan of these fast food chains. And some of them are doing well. Wendy's and Burger King, they've been doing well. I think everybody's moving towards, the Chipotles of the world and, kind of higher end, quick eating. Wendy's is still junk food. Even though they've done great things with their marketing and rebranding the company and the menu and all that. And I think it's a lot better than it has been. And that's probably why it's been doing well as of late. But right now, with a 32 PE, decent amount of debt, falling sales, now falling earnings, they don't have positive cash flow. They do have positive operating cash flow, but not... they're putting a lot of money into the business, huge capital spending, and that's something I don't really like. I'm not a big fan of. And return on equity is only 7%. I don't hate it, but I think you'll probably do okay over the long term. But it's definitely wouldn't be my favorite place to allocate capital at this time. Okay. Let's get to our talking point of the day, and it's about options. A lot of people talk about options or get enticed by options, and many investors have successful investing careers without ever once looking at an option. There's a wide variety of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, all types of investment vehicles out there, and options are one of them. And it's a way to leverage, a good way to leverage your money, into a certain name, either on the long side or the short side. You can short stocks with options. You can go long stocks with options. But what options do is they let you establish the precise level of risk you're willing to take in your investment. They can help you adapt to changing market conditions without having to make, massive course corrections in your portfolio constantly, right? Because you kind of set it and your risk level, because you can buy a put on a particular name you own. So you know what your risk level is. Now, the issue with options, and one of the reasons why I think the best strategy is to always sell options, not buy options, is that those who buy options often lose every penny they pay for them. Most people, when they buy a put for protection, they lose every penny of it. Now, it's true that if you buy options at exactly the right time, you do have the potential to enjoy huge gains that greatly exceed anything you could really achieve in a short period of time by owning shares of stock. Now, the most obvious example of this is, say, as a buyout candidate, right? So say it's trading for $20 a share, and other company comes in and buys it out for $30 a share. Well, if you own the stock at 20, you're getting it bought from you at 30, you made 50% of your money. But say you owned an option, say you bought a call option at, say, a 22 strike price, and you paid, it's at 20 now, you might pay a dollar on the high side. Okay, say you paid a dollar for that call option. Obviously, it depends on how far out you go, near-term option would be going to be less than an option that goes out, you know, months and years, right? So say you paid a dollar for it, and it gets bought out for 30, and your strike price is 20. Well, you paid a dollar. You now buy it for 20 and sell it for 30. You made $8 a share. Minus your dollar you paid, you made $7 a share on a dollar. So you made 700% versus 50% if you own that stock. So you can see the type of leverage you can get. But 99 times out of 100, this isn't going to happen. This is an extremely rare situation. So we're going to go to break, but coming up after the break, I'm going to talk about really the four basic strategies you can use options with and what are probably the best strategies if you're going to dabble in the options arena. Now, coming up in the next half hour, ready or not, 9 out of 10 women will be in charge of family finances sooner or later. InvestTalk Personal comes in the next segment. You probably have your own money questions. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now on InvestTalk. Let's go to John in Boston. How are you doing, John?
Good. How are you, Justin?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
First of all, I want to say I love you guys' show. I look forward to listening to you every day.
I appreciate you tuning in.
Yeah. So, quick question. I'm 31 years old. I'm currently fully invested in stocks. Mm-hmm. Trading within my 401k, there's a brokerage link through Fidelity. I have a mix of individual stocks and ETFs, a lot of SPY. But I'm looking to get some exposure to bonds, just a small position in bonds. And I was wondering what you thought about bond ETFs, specifically BND.
BND, that's a pretty broad-based ETF, if I remember right. Let me bring it up real quick.
Yep.
That is the Vanguard Total Bond Market ETF. It's kind of misleading because I don't think it carries any junk bonds, but it does have a pretty good mix of treasury notes, corporate bonds, agency securities, mortgage-backed securities, things like that. So it's a group of very high-quality bonds. Yields about... 2.46%, which is, you know, pretty low, but in this environment, that's what you would expect. Are you looking for it kind of as a diversifier to your portfolio?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm of the school of thought that the market is beginning to get overvalued. I think it is a little bit overvalued, maybe not ready to pop, but I want to get some exposure to hedge some of that risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a decent one for that. I think the biggest risk is that part that's the corporate bond sector. Now, even though it's high-grade corporate bonds, you know, those still will take a hit if you have a recession. Now, it won't take the type of hit that equities will, but it will take a hit to some degree. So I think it's good. It may not be the precise one that I would probably pick. ETF I would pick to diversify myself if I was, you know, trying to go that way, but it's definitely not a bad way to go, and the expenses are low, and it's well diversified, so I like that.
Sir, do you have another fund you could mention? I know you have certain limitations.
Yeah, well, you know, there are ETFs out there that are more, you know, of a pure play, so if you're trying to be, you know, more ultra safe, you know, you can look at IEF, which is the 10-year Treasury bond. That may be a little bit safe on the safer side. You could also look at something along the lines of like a Jenny May type of ETF, like GNMA, is an ETF that iShares Core Jenny May Bond Fund. A little bit lower yield because it has a little bit lower duration, so you're not going to have as much interest rate risk there. So those are ones that I might think of as well. But you know, the BND is good as well because it is pretty diversified. As I think it only has, let's see what the percentage of corporate bonds. It It's only about 23% of the portfolio, about 40% is in treasuries, about 18% in mortgage-backed securities, and then you have, you know, a couple other ancillary ones as well. So, you know, it's pretty diversified, so I like that. So if you're looking for broad diversification, I do think that's probably a good one to be in.
Okay, and then I guess last piece to this question is, as interest rates go up, if the Fed decides to raise rates, how is that going to affect it?
Well, it'll definitely affect, and you see it has recently. You saw interest rates go up. This went from a high at the end of January of about $84 and change. Now we're at $82.70 after a little pop today. So, you know, it's not a dramatic move. You're talking about 2%, 2.5% or so move. So, you know, it's not too dramatic. The duration's about seven, eight years. So it's definitely in the intermediate term, but it's on the shorter side of the intermediate term. So I like that as well, that it's not super exposed to interest rates. The average credit quality is AA, so that's high quality. So overall, I like it as a good diversifier for you.
Sounds great. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem, John. Thanks for calling. He was asking about BND, the Vanguard Total Bond Market Index. Let's go to John in New York. How are you doing, John?
How are you tonight?
Doing very well. What can I do for you?
Good. I just want to talk about a little gold. I've been looking into gold for my portfolio recently. I like ABX, and I also like GG. A couple potential things I have my eye on.
Yeah. The GG stock chart looks great. I mean, it's had a big run starting at the end of December with gold into about mid-January, and has really been consolidating sideways. So I like that. I like that they're on the chartways, that it's remaining strong, even though you know, gold has pulled back decently over the past month or so. So that, to me, is a big positive. Now, when you're talking about valuation-wise, I would probably say Barrick Gold, ABX, might be a little stronger. Earnings are supposed to go up 11% this year, whereas you know, GG is only supposed to go up 9%. ABX pays a little bit lower dividend, and GG a little higher. And you know, GG, but also their revenue hasn't been declining as much as Barrick ABX. So if I were to pick one of the two, I would go with Gold Corp over ABX.
Okay, and I was curious to know, both of those companies, would they be considered mid-caps? Do you think they're mid-cap stocks? I know they're international holdings.
Well, ABX is, Barack's about $14 billion market cap. Gold Corp's about $18 billion market cap. You know, those, the small, mid-cap, large-cap, mega-cap names are, you know, the definitions kind of are up to interpretation. You know, it used to be under $1 billion was small cap, $1 billion to $10 billion was mid cap, and $10 billion and up is large cap. Well, I mean, nowadays, as the market goes up, you know, valuations are kind of extreme. Then I would say, you know, you kind of have to move that scale up a little bit. Right, so you know, I would say, yeah, these are in the mid cap space for me. I only see large cap as maybe 25 billion and up. That's kind of my threshold for large cap, and then you have mega cap. To me, is over 100 billion. So, to me, you know, 15 billion, 19 billion. You're talking about a couple mid caps. So, you know, on the bigger side of mid cap, but in the mid cap space.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for calling, John. He was asking about ABX, that was Barrick Gold and Gold Corp, but I would go with Gold Corp over Barrick. Now, before the break, I talked quickly about options and how you can make big money on options. A lot bigger percentage in a short period of time than you can on individual stocks. But the vast majority of options that are purchased expire worthless. So let's talk about what are four basic strategies. We're talking about basic strategies. You can get really complicated. You can do a million different things with options by buying this call and selling this put, or buying a put here and selling a put there. I mean, it can get very complex. But let's go to some basic ones. And the most common option strategy out there is called a covered call. Right, so you all 100 shares of ABC Corporation, whatever corporation you want to talk about. Say it's trading for $20 a share. You can sell a call option. Say you get a buck, again, and that strike price is 22. So you sell it to somebody else who thinks it's going to go above $22 a share. Well, you sell that, you get that dollar, and no matter what, if the stock goes down, stock goes up, you get to keep that dollar. But if it goes above $22 a share, you're going to get it called away from you, meaning you're going to have to sell it for $22 a share. But that's higher than it's where you're trading now. It's 10% higher than where it's trading now at 20. So that's a call option. But if it goes down, say it goes down to 19 and the option expires, you didn't really lose any money because you got that dollar, you kept it, and now that 22 strike call is worthless. And so it helps you harness, get gains on the upside. It maybe limits your gains on the upside, but it also buffers maybe some downside volatility as well. So that's a covered call. That's one of the most popular strategies out there. And then you can do put options. You can write put options. You can sell puts, meaning, okay, it's trading at 20 today. Maybe you think it's a little expensive, you know, and you say, if it went to $15 a share, I would buy the hell out of that company. I would love it if it went there. Well, why wait? You can sell. You can say, I'll buy it at $15 a share if it goes down there, to somebody who may be worried that it goes below $15 a share and wants to cut its losses at $15 a share. And you're happy to take that stock from him. Well, you could say, okay, I'm going to get a dollar a share at 15 strike. And if it goes down to $15 a share, you're going to buy it. You still get to keep your dollar. And effectively, you paid $14 a share. Right? But if it stays above $15 a share at expiration, you get to keep your dollar. You made a dollar a share. Yay. So that's selling options. And those, to me, are the two best ways that you can use options in your portfolio. Then you can buy options. Like I said, most of them expire worthless. But, you know, a lot of people use them to leverage up their portfolio, try to get big gains. Well, sometimes you can just do modest call options, right? You buy long-dated, meaning you go out a year plus on a particular stock you want to own. And it gives you exposure to that equity, and it keeps your risk very limited. And then finally, you can buy put options. You can say, you own it at 20. I don't want it to go below 18. If it does, I'm worried. I'm scared. I want to get out, but I don't want to worry about it. You just buy a put option. If the stock goes up, great. You made money. Your option's going to expire worthless, so you're going to lose a little bit of money on that put. But stock went up, so you're still happy. So those are the four basic option strategies. You have to figure out which one's right for you and make sure you understand the risks that are involved. Now, Steve is in San Ramon today for our hour-long individual retirement review sessions. He has some new dates to announce for Northern and Southern California coming up. And if you're not in the area, we can always schedule, we schedule a limited number of Skype and phone conferences as well. They're very simple, quick, very informative. Steve really gets down to the bottom of where you need to be with your money, gives you some suggestions, take them, leave them, whatever you want to do, but they're always informative and always helpful for everybody who has one with Steve. So if you like to set up an in-person meeting with Steve, or maybe just a phone call with Steve, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Make an Appointment button, and the staff will take care of the rest.
InvestTalk is brought to you every day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. If you'd like to see more about KPP Financial select portfolios, like our balanced income portfolio, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com.
Yes, I'm 35 years old and looking to put some money in the market. I was wondering what your thoughts are on Chevron. I'm looking for a growth stock for long-term hold. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at Chevron. Most people know what Chevron is. It's a huge company, $200 billion market cap, $208 billion market cap. Obviously, it's been hurt by lower oil prices. Went from $135 a share in July of last year, hit a low of a little bit less than $100 a share at the end of January. Has had a little spike up to 110 at the close today. And he's looking for a growth stock. That's what kind of concerns me. Chevron is not a growth stock. Don't expect it to be a growth stock. If you're looking for big growth, Chevron is not the place that you really want to be. Chevron is a big blue chip name, and currently I would call it a value. It's a large cap value company. It's cheap, especially with oil prices so low. Trading 11 times PE ratio, but you know, you're talking about a company that made $13.44 a share in 2011, almost that much in 2012. 2015, they're going to make $3.87 a share, down 62% profit. Now it's going to go, supposed to go back up to $6.78 a share next year. But you know, this is a company that's its earnings are wild, and it depends on oil prices. And I don't think, you know, with shale production, I don't think that oil prices are going to go stay high for a dramatic period of time. I think they'll stay in the $60 to $80 range for a longer period, especially as shale oil still remains a big growth driver of oil production in this country. And, you know, Chevron could go in there and buy up some of these companies, but Chevron's so big, they're not going to be able to move the needle very much. So, you know, while Chevron's cheap, it pays a 4% dividend, I like that. I think it'll be a pretty good company to own over the long term. Don't think it's a growth stock. It's the exact opposite of a growth stock. So it depends on what you're looking for. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein. Our money management firm, KPP Financial, offers four different programs suited to different needs and life situations, like our balanced income portfolio. You can find out more about it on our website at investtalk.com. Look for the investing tab.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. If you have an idea for a talking point that you'd like to know more about, get in touch. Write us a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. These misunderstandings can lead you down the wrong path, headed toward an insecure retirement without adequate funds. Eight things people get wrong about retirement. That's our talking point next time. Be sure to join us tomorrow on Invest Talk.
It's time for Invest Talk Personal, the day-to-day money decisions that can have a lasting impact. Now, 9 out of 10 U.S. women will be put in charge of their finances sooner or later. Now, being widowed or divorced are the most common reasons, but most women don't realize that they've got some reason to be optimistic. Women tend to sell themselves short, underestimating their own strengths and not being aware of some of the tools they have at their disposal. Now, with some effort, women can prepare themselves for the job at hand, which is managing their own money, even if they don't feel like they're ready now. Now, many women are really actually better suited for the job than men. Women tend to save more. And you probably heard surveys about, Steve and I talk about, a lot of women outperform men as investors. Women cite three reasons for lack of confidence in their own financial planning. One is not doing proper research. Two is not knowing who to talk to. And three is not having enough time. But actually, one of the overlooked resources for knowledge and guidance is the workplace. Many employers, hopefully, offer investment workshops, webinars during work hours, typically delivered by their 401k plan administrator. We do that for our 401k plans. You can squeeze training into the workday. All you have to do is ask. So the bottom line is women are more prepared than they really think. So think about that, women. If you, and men too, you have to really prepare your women. Because one day they're going to be in charge of their finances, most likely. Maybe they already are. Maybe they need some more guidance. All right, so that's InvestTalk Personal. If you have a question on this topic or any other money matters, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART. Or make it a personal note that will come directly to me. Just click on the Contact Justin or Contact Steve button on InvestTalk.com. Now, quickly, before we end the day, I want to talk a little bit about college financial aid. This is the time of year that students are thinking, seniors in high school are trying to decide which university they're going to attend in the fall. And this is starting January 1st, you can fill out financial aid packages. Now, there's still time to apply, but don't wait too long. Always try to apply sooner rather than later, because some states and colleges award financial aid on a first-come, first-served basis. So the sooner you apply, the better your odds of getting the maximum aid package for which you are eligible. Now let's talk about the myths. One is only students from poor families get financial aid. That's not true. Now only 5% of dependent students from households making $60,000 or more received federal Pell Grants last year. So only 5%. So if you make over 60 grand, maybe you, the odds of you getting a financial aid there are pretty low. But it's more likely that you'll receive institutional aid, meaning grants from the college itself. Now, about one quarter of all students from households making $106,000 or more and enrolled at a four-year public college received a grant from that college, as compared with 38% of those households making $30,000 or less. So, you know, still, that's still about 25%. So don't think that just because you might not get federal aid, that you won't get aid from that particular college. Also, myth two is it's best not to save for college because it only will hurt my child's chances of getting financial aid. That's not true. While you are penalized for money saved for college, if it's held in the parent's name, it only affects your financial aid by about 5%. So if you're going to get $10,000 in aid, it's only going to drop that aid by about $564. So if you had $10,000, right? So it's going to drop that aid by about $500. But if it's held in the student's name, it's 20%. So if you're going to save, save in the parent's name. And there's a few more as well, but if you want to read more about this article, I think it was a great article. It was on Morningstar.com, and you can read more about that. Now, before we close the hour, it's a very useful tool, one that we have included into our consultations with new clients. It's a risk analysis tool that measures your comfort with risk and helps us determine whether a portfolio matches up. It's free for all of our listeners to use on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today. Enjoy your night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.